Markets are taking a chill pill ahead of the election. As for the news media, gentlemen, start your engines. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is Monday, November 5th. We'll talk TV ads, media guidelines, and we're going to talk with Univision anchor Jorge Ramos about immigration, one of the lost issues in this campaign. Also, Sasquatch shows up at some point. Stick with us.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts designed with convenient features to help reach savings goals. To learn more or open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
It's hard enough to find a place to live in New York in normal times. Sandy and her aftermath has made things a lot worse. Here's New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
We think we could have something between 30 and 40,000 people that we're going to have to find housing for.
Marketplace's Dan Bobkoff has been at one shelter in Manhattan this morning, and he has this story.
Stand outside the High School of Graphic Communications Arts on Manhattan's west side, and you see the presence of two New Yorks post-Sandy. On one side of the gates, dog walkers and runners are starting their day. On the other side, hundreds of displaced and homeless New Yorkers waiting to find out where to go next.
Well, they're feeding us, you know.
Jamel Goodrich has been at the temporary shelter since last week. He says many displaced by the storm wound up here.
Some person lost everything, crying, kids. It's sad.
The shelter had issues with sanitation and safety. John Morales and his wife came here when the storm hit their home on the city's Far East Side.
I went to the bathroom, saw some guy defecate in the sink.
Red Cross volunteers estimate nearly 1,000 were housed here a couple of nights ago. That's down to about 200 now, as some find new shelters or return home. By Wednesday, they'll be gone, and this school will again be a school. Still, Mayor Bloomberg estimates about 20,000 people will need housing long-term. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff for Marketplace.
Odds are pretty decent that we're in for a couple subdued days on Wall Street. The election, of course, won't instantly resolve anything, but we will know whose vision will set the agenda. Julia Coronado is chief economist with BNP Paribas, and she's with me on many Mondays to talk about the markets. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what are some of the answers that investors are waiting to hear?
Well, I think the first thing investors will be focused on will be how the fiscal cliff is resolved. So all this enormous package of tax hikes and spending cuts that are set to take effect January 1st, how do the candidates deal with this? That needs to be dealt with immediately. The second issue is monetary policy. Who would the next Fed chair be under Romney versus Obama? That is a very big focus of investors right now.
Do you get a sense from the buzz around you or from your own insight that one outcome or the other in this election might be better received by the markets?
Well, there's a general sense that Romney is more, as a Republican, more business-friendly, and you might get a stock market bounce off of a Romney victory. But that's far from a universally held opinion. And in general, I think getting uncertainty behind us, just getting clarity on what the political lay of the land is, mm-hmm. will be positive for markets.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with BNP Paribas. Thanks, as always.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, with that in mind, let's do the numbers. The growth of the U.S. service sector slowed a bit in October, but markets are indeed steady and doing very little ahead of tomorrow's election. At this hour, a few hours into trading, the Dow and the S&P 500 are down just a touch. The NASDAQ is up just a bit. So not much in the way of economic or other data headed our way this morning. So how about a little survey from across the pond? People in the U.K. were asked which public figures appear most often in their nightmares. The winner? Finance Minister George Osborne. Now, he's been the face of the tough budget cuts that have affected people there. Still seems a little strange. I'm sure Americans have plenty of vivid nightmares, right? But if you find yourself dreaming night after night about Timothy Geithner, you might want to talk to somebody about that. Okay, so let's talk about getting the numbers right. This could be one of the tightest presidential elections ever. That means the race to be first among the news media will be intense. And yet, not screwing up. Also important. So, how are news organizations threading that needle for tomorrow's big night? Andrew Bojan is a reporter and a blogger at the journalism think tank, the Poynter Institute. Good to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
So, tell me some of the things that media organizations are going to be trying tomorrow to try to avoid jumping the gun or making other mistakes.
There is AP, for example, has warned its reporters not to tweet out the results of races that were called by other news organizations. NBC told the New York Times that it's going to have its statisticians physically separated from its anchors to try to keep incomplete information from jumping the fence. So, you know, there's a lot of redundancy that people are trying to build in to try to be right rather than be first.
Now, there have been a lot of lessons learned on this front, but I'm not sure I believe it. I just am not sure they can hold themselves back. I don't know. You're a close observer of this industry. What do you think?
You know, from an economic perspective, I think there are still greater rewards for breaking news than there are sanctions for screwing up. Now, in 2012, journalists compete with their own news organizations when it comes to breaking news. But, you know, you look back, like when Hurricane Sandy hit and the fake pictures that were flying all over Twitter.
Yeah.
A bunch of journalists tweeted those. A rumor that the New York Stock Exchange had flooded ended up on CNN. And you got to wonder, is it really so bad to screw up?
Well, right. And on that note, these mistakes do happen. But aren't savvy news consumers just kind of used to this thing by now?
Well, I think they're getting more used to it. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. Information moves a lot more quickly now. You know, if you recognize that mistakes are going to happen in a fast and complex news story, you can be ready to combat false information, especially when it comes out of your shop. And good social media plans will have contingencies to attack mistakes. Bad ones will pretend that they never happened.
Andrew Bojan, reporter at the Poynter Institute. Great to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank, FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts with a competitive variable interest rate and convenient access via phone or web. Link your existing bank accounts without switching banks. To learn how this FDIC-insured high-yield savings account can complement your savings goals and to open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
In swing states, local TV has been blissfully free of ads for car dealerships and furniture stores, the usual stuff. Unfortunately, they have been displaced by political ads, which have crowded out just about everything else and sent ad prices sky high. Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports now on what happens after Tuesday.
Viewers tormented by endless campaign ads may feel like 4-year-old Abigail Evans. She's the tearful star of the YouTube video that racked up more than 4.5 million views last week.
I'm tired of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
That's why you're crying? Oh.
Her mom comforts her that the election's over soon, but for local businesses, the pain continues. Karen Ashworth is a media buyer at Virginia ad firm Barber Martin.
Still, the rates are going to be a little higher than normal. I don't think that they're going to go down until January.
Part of this is the holiday season, but mainly there's pent-up demand from advertisers who didn't get on the air during the race. Denise Goff of Lewis Media Partners places ads for Virginia clients. She says several TV stations are booked up.
The 2 weeks following the election, they are pretty wall-to-wall sold out.
YouTube star Abigail Evans may have dry eyes by Wednesday, but local advertisers will still have plenty to weep about. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
With just one day to go until Election Day, here's the marathon travel schedule facing the candidates. Mitt Romney's going to Florida, Virginia, Ohio, and New Hampshire. President Obama's headed to Wisconsin, Ohio, and Iowa. Both candidates are likely to talk about the economy, of course, all along the way. But there are a lot of other issues at stake in this election, and here at Marketplace, we've been trying to shine some light on those. Issues like immigration. And to talk about that, my colleague Jeremy Hobson spoke earlier today with Jorge Ramos. He's the well-known anchor for Univision News. Here's Jeremy.
Well, great to have you. So first of all, you have talked to both of the candidates, and I want to ask you first about President Obama. What do we know about his plans if he's reelected for immigration reform?
President Barack Obama says that he supports immigration reform. He is for the DREAM Act. And the problem for many Latinos is that in 2008, he said that he was going to make a proposal for immigration reform during his first year in office, and he didn't do that. He broke a promise. He also has deported more than 1.5 million immigrants In other words, he has deported more immigrants than any other president in the history of the United States. But Latinos do understand that he is for immigration reform, and therefore 74% of Latinos say they will vote for President Barack Obama and only 26% for Mitt Romney.
So they believe that he's going to do something in the next term if he's reelected, even though he didn't do much in the first term.
For many Latinos, it's very difficult to believe again President Barack Obama, but Latinos have a very difficult choice. They have to choose between a president who broke a promise, but at the same time who's saying that he's going to continue struggling for immigration reform. But on the other hand, they have Mitt Romney, who says that he's going to veto the DREAM Act, who says that he's for self-deportation, and who hasn't given the specifics on what he would do with 11 million undocumented immigrants. So having this choice, most Latinos will vote for President Barack Obama.
Now, besides what you have said about Mitt Romney's plans, mm-hmm. what else do we know about what he wants to do? Does he said that he wants to do anything on immigration reform in the next 4 years?
He says that he's for a permanent solution. But at the same time, there are a few problems. First, he continues to call undocumented immigrants illegals. That's a code word for many Latinos. No human being is illegal. So if you put together calling them illegals, if you insist on making sure that the DREAM Act won't become a law in this country, and if you insist of this very radical idea of self-deportation, honestly, that's very scary for many Latinos.
What about when we hear things like, we can't make any moves on immigration reform until we close the borders and secure the borders? How does that sort of thing play with Latino voters?
Not very well, because what we do know is that the cities and the towns along the border are among the safest in the country. What we do know is that, this is really curious, but 40% of all undocumented immigrants come by plane. They simply overstay their visas. So when you say that the border is not secure enough, really, even if you propose a huge wall, it really is not going to work. Many Latinos think it's simply an excuse for not trying to do something more specific on immigration reform.
Finally, we know that the economy is the number one issue for Americans as a whole. Does that hold up as well for Latino voters, or is immigration more important?
No, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Poll after poll shows that the most important issue for Latinos has to do with jobs and the economy and education and healthcare. In other words, we Latinos, we're exactly as the rest of America. But when it comes to immigration, you know, it's personal for us. More than half of all Latinos in this country over 18 years of age, we were born outside the United States. I was born in Mexico, for instance. So it is immigration, the issue that decides who is with you and who is against you. And therefore, that's the importance of immigration in this election.
Jorge Ramos is an anchor with Univision News. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you.
Through the recession and the so-called jobless recovery, community colleges have assumed a pretty heavy burden. Get people ready for jobs. Even as those jobs seem to disappear and the community colleges themselves face tight budgets. Tomorrow, Bryce Harris takes over the biggest community college system in the U.S. In fact, California's community colleges make up the country's biggest higher education system of any kind. Harris has worked in community colleges almost all his career, and he's taken over tomorrow on the same day as California voters could deal his system a $340 million budget cut with their vote on a ballot proposition, Prop 30. Bryce Harris, good to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
How have the recession and the slow recovery changed the mission of the community college system that you're about to take over?
Well, I think what we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years is that there has been a rationing of education and therefore a somewhat narrowing of our mission. We're still doing all of our component mission parts. We are doing customized training for business and industry. We are doing lifelong learning programs. But when the legislature asked us to begin rationing education, they told us to focus mainly on transfer education, career technology, education, and remediation. And so when we've had reduced courses, we've tried to avoid reducing in those three areas.
What exactly is happening in California with regard to rationing education, and why is it such a problem?
Well, it's a horrible problem. What's happened in the last 4 years is we've seen the enrollment in California's community colleges artificially reduced by 485,000 students. Even the students that are in our colleges are taking far longer to get their degrees and certificates than they should because they can't get the courses necessary to complete their programs. And that's hard on the state because it delays the improvement of the workforce, but it's especially hard on the student who is seeing their pathway to a better life slowed down dramatically.
The economy is weak in California and elsewhere. Employers aren't hiring with any real strength. How much can you really do for students in that situation?
Well, the truth is we can do a great deal. You know, one of the strengths of California's community college system is that we have institutions that serve at the regional level. And that's why we have local boards and local colleges serving those needs at the local level. So in spite of our fiscal challenges, we are still a workhorse of higher education, not only in California, but in the country. And I would argue to some extent that as goes this California community college system, so goes the state of California and to some degree, the competitiveness of this country.
Bryce Harris is the incoming chancellor of the California Community Colleges system. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, with college basketball season kicking off, University of Minnesota star forward Trevor Mbakwe took to Twitter over the weekend and put his personal finances on the line. Mbakwe tweeted that if his Gophers don't make the NCAA tourney this year, he will pay back his scholarship money, all of it. Yahoo Sports ballparks that at around $30,000. Minnesota's chances are considered pretty good, but they're hardly a lock. It's not at all clear the university would hold him to his tweet, but, you know, budgets are tight there, too. And finally, there aren't many folks in official academia who study Bigfoot. One of the few, though, is biological anthropologist Jeffrey Meldrum at Idaho State University. And the school has recently approved his dramatic new research project. It's a blimp equipped with thermal imaging to float above the Pacific Northwest, looking for Sasquatch. Meldrum will be the first to concede the evidence is limited. That's the point, of course. The challenge is the same, he says, as with any animal that is, quote, rare, solitary, nocturnal, and far-ranging in habitat. And what better than a blimp, I say, to prove his critics are full of hot air. And before you write in, yes, that's just a silly joke. I know that they're filled with helium, but who can pass up a blimp hot air joke? That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.